almost like orange or something.
Hold on. Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2021. This is the third of four streams tonight, and this is with Black Pigeon Speaks, also known now as Felix Rex. Felix, welcome back. Why don't you first start by introducing Felix Rex? I mean, that was a new channel. I think everyone knows about Black Pigeon. Everyone, you know, your familiar face. When did you create Felix Rex, and why was that?
Well, Felix Rex, I mean, I actually was in London when Black Pigeon got annihilated by Google for a couple of days. I mean, I think you remember that episode. Sorry, can you hear me okay? I'm just moving my microphone.
Yes.
Is the sound all right?
Yes.
And I think you remember that. And I apologize for your viewership. I have just woken up and I have a bit of bedhead and a bit of bed brain at the moment. It's early in the morning where I am. Well, what it was that my channel, it's like, for example, Stefan Molyneux, who's been eviscerated from the platform, but also Paul Watson. I was talking to him when I was recently in London. I went out with him a few times, and he was saying every time he uploads a video, he loses like 1,000 followers. And the same thing was happening with the Black Pigeon channel. It's lost probably 70,000 subscribers, and in less than a year or something like that, over the last couple of years, I'm not exactly sure how many.
I think you had just south of 500K when it got banned.
Yeah, so came back, it went up to 600, 650. Now it's down to 525, I think. And so what it is that I pretty much was... hold on a second, let me move this over. I was just basically... It was demonetized and completely like killed by the algorithm. And so I started Felix Rex as an alternative. And then that worked out really well for about a year and a half. And now it's they found me there too. So, I mean, what used to be like a channel where I'd get 100, 150,000, 200,000 views per video, it's getting maybe 50, 60,000 views. So they found me as well. So I'm just using my own name, Felix, on the new channel. I mean, we've met, you know who I am, several times, I think, at least more than once.
Yeah. Three times. Yeah.
Three times, something like that. And, so it was more of a, and I think I'm probably going to have to start a new channel. And then once they find me again, I'm probably going to, I don't know, man. I'm getting tired of the whole game, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it becomes tiresome. It becomes wearing to try to evade the censorship. I mean, I certainly stayed on for longer than I expected to on YouTube, and I got banned in February this year. And in order to stay on, you have to be paranoid. You have to worry about every video. And you have to be very careful about what you say, because the topics that are interesting are the topics that you cannot speak honestly about. So,
well, all of my videos on fiat currency and the creation of money and the Federal Reserve, they've all been taken down for hate speech. I'm not even making this up. Like stuff when you talk about fiat currency, you talk about things like the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, the Bank of Canada, and these national banks, they've all been basically removed for hate speech when you talk about our economic system. So, I mean, we're literally in territory where unless you are an avowed Maoist or an avowed communist, you're not going to be able to have any sort of voice. And I actually, I think I told you this a couple of years ago, like I kind of went off politics for the most part a couple of years ago, even like just, I don't see a political solution to anything we're dealing with at this point. And because of that, I thought, well, fuck it. I mean, excuse me. I didn't mean to swear. I thought, well, I'm not sure what the TOS or we're on Odyssey or what are we on right now?
Yeah, yeah, we're on Odyssey. Yeah, it's fine.
And I thought, well, you know, stuff it. I mean, you know, there is no political solution. I get attacked more from supposedly my own side than I do from the other. So, well, I get attacked from both sides, but I get attacked equally in measure from supposedly our side. So it's like, you know what? And I've gone off. I make videos on history. Before I was in London, the last time I saw you, I was in Berlin, and I did a whole series of videos on Berlin and the aftermath of the rape of Berlin by the Soviet Union. And I did stuff on, you know, the Führer bunker and some sort of, you know, interesting stuff. But, you know, but it doesn't matter because, I mean, I don't know if you even use BitChute anymore. I've got almost 100,000 subscribers on that site, but literally my entire comment section is just, well, he's the enemy. He's the enemy. He's not doing right. No, sir. We gotta get that guy. Gotta get him.
There's a lot of antisocial stuff on the right. This came up that one of my previous guests was talking about this, how unfriendly a lot of the right can be, like the online right. And if you don't, well, you know, they can be very ideological. And I don't know. I think that people enjoy falling out and they enjoy being aggressive. The internet brings out the worst in people, of course. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. There can be a nasty atmosphere. I mean, I get a lot of stuff as well, a lot of shit from various people. And, yeah, I think quite a few content creators have got burnt out by that. I mean, as much as they get burnt out by the attacks.
I don't even read. Half the time I don't even upload to BitChute anymore because I just don't want to read the comments. And I don't want to deal with the people that are on there because and then they wonder why they're always losing. Right.
Exactly.
And why are you always losing? Look at yourselves. Look at yourselves. And yeah, that's all I would say. You're looking good, by the way. You're looking better than the last time I saw you. You changed your regime or something. You're looking really healthy. Well done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Well done. Yeah, I've been fine. I mean, this is I think it's maybe just the lighting. Okay.
But yeah, going back to the BitChute, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interject that comment. I was just the point was, is that it's almost pitiful. Like, so you've got no voice, you've got no support, you got no billionaires there. I was going to open up the window here, get some air in my room. You've got no support, you got no billionaires backing you, you've got nothing, and you've got very few people left even speaking your case for you, and all you do is attack them. Well, you know what? Pretty soon, all you're going to have is these BitChute wing nuts that are out there talking about where the QAnon. It's only a matter of time until Trump is reinstated as president. It's only a matter of time. He's going to be president soon.
Yeah, the weird evangelical stuff that took over towards the end of Trump's. Yes, it's surreal, isn't it?
It is
these true believers, the QAnon types, and they're the only ones who are really still singing Trump's praises at this point. I think you know, anyone who's sane or level-headed has long since given up on Trump. I don't know what people are even hoping for if he gets voted in 2024. Why? So that we can have another 4 years of disappointment.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to lie. He did move the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
I always forget about that.
That is a triumph of diplomacy if I've ever heard one. And I'm sorry if that is the case. I mean, you have to get down on your knees and bow to his magnificence.
Yeah. And well, if only we could have 4 more years of that kind of stuff. Fabulous. But yeah, I know what you mean about the online community. And as I said, there are several content creators who I know have given up because of that. I mean, part of it is, you know, on YouTube and on Odyssey, you can just ban people from your channel so that they can't continue to shit up the comments thread with, you know, vitriol. That's a massive problem with BitChute, that you can't do that. So,
well, they're using a comment. I think it's some sort of app that you use on WordPress sites or something like that. So well, I mean,
they were, but they've now got their own custom comments system. But for some reason, you know, I don't know.
Anyway, I've almost given up on the. I mean, literally, I have 100,000 subscribers on BitChute, but I've just given up on the site because it's like if you go there, and it used to be like fairly decent stuff, but now you go on, everything that's trending is QAnon, Trump. It's just, and I don't know. It's just become a cesspool. But anyway,
what I would say is Odyssey points a way forward. I hope that BitChute does catch up with it. In the meantime, I still have more subscribers on BitChute than Odyssey. I think that's largely just inertia.
But yeah.
I do hope, I mean, BitChute, you know, I do think that the guy's heart is in the right place. I'm not just saying this, I really don't think that he's racist or whatever. I think that he is a guy who just believes in freedom of speech. And I think he, you know, it was a laudable goal.
The stupidest thing that he did, though, was put his company in the UK rather than Thailand, where he lives.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think he had reasons for doing that. But I don't want to, you know, neg him too much because, you know, he's put up with a lot of shit.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's quite a brave effort. Yeah. So anyway, but the Odyssey is there. It's very functional. It's the only trouble is the viewers. You know, it's still staying on the mainstream platform.
I'll get like 10,000-20,000 views on BitChute, but I'll get like 500 on Odyssey. So I mean, this is the problem, right? But it's like you said, it's just a matter of time. I mean, 3 years ago, BitChute was the same thing.
Yeah. And also, YouTube is only going to get more censorious. I mean, it's already like Kafka world.
Oh, it's interesting because I've got a VPN, and once you start putting the VPN on BitChute, you can watch stuff that you can't watch otherwise. It's very interesting.
That I could imagine that being useful because I know that a lot of channels are banned in Britain. Which again is for legal reasons. I know that they had to do that.
The one I like is the Commandant. He's this LARPer who wears a gas mask and he pretends that he's some sort of like Third Reich dude who's the descendant of people that moved down to Antarctica. I don't know if you've seen him. And he's got this Darth Vader sound effect when he talks about. I am the Commandant, and I will tell you right now. He's fucking fabulous, but you can't watch him if you're in the UK. And so I if you put your VPN on, you can watch him. So
see, the time was you'd be able to see that on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. I mean, well, YouTube, I remember, like, YouTube, there was, like, channels, bum fights, where, like, they'd pay hobos and homeless people money to get into fist fights with each other. And I remember they paid some guy a bottle of vodka to tattoo, what was it?
It was bum fight. It was the
logo. on his head, on his forehead.
Yeah.
And these people are, there's like, yeah, anyway, so, yeah.
It was pretty, it's the Wild West. I think that was like 2000.
It was before 2015.
Definitely. It was before the Google era. It's really the Google era that's fucked it all up. You know, when I first started, they were just introducing, what was it called, Google Plus. And when I just started the channel, 2014, people could only, there was some bizarre rule. They were trying to push everyone to get onto Google Plus, onto their social network, because it was their rival to Facebook. So the way they incentivized people was they could only reply, it was something like you could only reply to someone's comment if you were in a Google Plus circle with them, which meant like being in a group with them on Google Plus. So it was just fucking, it was so tedious. And I guess that was the start of Google showing itself to be this monopoly, a bit tyrannical, like just fucking you around. Whereas prior to that, they'd been, you know, playing nice and what was it? Don't be evil, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Their motto was don't be evil. Yeah, exactly. Mm.
Yeah, and then they started getting pushy like that. They started taking liberties and just fucking people around. But then, of course, Susan Wojcicki became the CEO of YouTube. I think that was 2015. And since then, it's just been this fucking very sharp decline, very like consistent. Year by year, it's got worse. And I know people have heard me moaning about this many times for the last few years. It's not a new topic at all. And I think it's a done deal at this point. It's just everyone accepts there's no assumption of freedom of speech anymore. We all know the big platforms are dead to freedom of speech at this point. You know,
but why is it so hard for people? I watched this video by Stefan Molyneux, who's been, the guy's been nuked off of everything from YouTube to MailChimp. He's been nuked off of everything. And so why is it so difficult? And he was actually making the case of why is it so difficult for people to click? He says, yeah, I haven't been deplatformed. I've been replatformed. And the thing was, is that he was lamenting on the fact that, you know, he had 1 million subscribers on YouTube, and it's so impossible for your average person to just click to another website to see what he has to say. And it was kind of sad, because the thing was, is all of Twitter was celebrating in his lamentation, and they were celebrating like, we won.
Yeah.
He's gone. And now again, look at him. He's frustrated, and we've got him.
Yeah. It was sick. There was real sadism there. And again, 20 years ago.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, I remember it. It was this clip of him lamenting this, as anyone would, to whom that had happened. Yeah. And they were all gloating about it and taking the piss out of him, basically celebrating that they had ruined this man's livelihood, deleted him from the mainstream social discourse.
But he was deleted, but not just YouTube. Man, the guy, like I said, MailChimp, where he couldn't even send emails to people. He was deleted off of Airbnb. He was deleted off of Uber. You can't get a taxi cab in Uber cities, you know?
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I think he might still be on Facebook, but I'm not sure about that.
Talking about Facebook, I mean, like, I don't know. To be honest, I got, it's funny, after I started my channel, it was weird because I had a Facebook from 2008, I think. And then after I started my channel in 2016 or 2017, when I started my channel, they're like, oh yeah, we need proof of your identity. Please send us your passport or your driver's license. They locked my account. It's like, yeah, fuck off. And I haven't had a Facebook ever since. Go fuck yourself. And I think that a lot of I'm sorry, I don't really know anyone other than like my aunt, who's like in her 60s, who uses Facebook anymore. Like, yeah. It's kind of like a domain of like the third world and boomers. Like,
yeah. I went on there a few weeks ago just to advertise Millennial, and it's, you know, there are a surprising number of people still there, but it's not nearly as active or busy as it used to be. I mean, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it was a hive of activity. I really don't know. You know, it surprises me that it still has the sort of cultural hold that it does.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering too. Because you see, like the U.S. Senate, or they're like, we're going to bring Facebook in for another hearing about their censorship. I mean, you're never going to do anything. I mean, I saw Donald Trump, and he was like, you know, maybe I should have done more about internet censorship while I was president. Like, yeah, right, jackass. I mean, oh, while I'm monitoring the situation. Yeah, you should have done something, and you didn't. And look at yourself. You're a sitting U.S. president that was absolutely deplatformed while you were sitting behind the Resolute desk in the White House, in the Oval Office. And you allow that to happen to all of your supporters, and then it happened to you. So, I mean,
yeah, it's very difficult to sympathize with him, because he had 4 years. And yeah. I think maybe he just didn't understand how important social media is nowadays, and was to his getting elected in the first place. Whether he understood it or not, he did nothing. Nothing. No, what did he do? Anything? Did he do a single thing to help? I can't think of it.
He moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Come on.
Yeah.
Give him credit where credit is due.
That seems to be basically it. And I can't think of anything else he did. It's remarkable. But yeah, I think he was useless. And it's frustrating because he could have decreed something, presidential, whatever it is.
Absolutely an executive order that overridden the courts, whatever. So I mean, it is that, and that's kind of where I was going with. I mean, 2024. I mean, it's only 2 more weeks till Trump's reinstated as president, and that's what as we get back to whatever it is. But anyway.
Yeah, I think that he was useless. I think that his hands were tied. He didn't have people around him who would support him. So he was basically just operating on his own. The machine just crushed him at every turn.
The machine ate him and spat him out.
Yeah. It's tragic, but I think he probably, my only way of understanding this is he approached it thinking that being president would be like being CEO of a corporation where you get your way. Yes, there's a board underneath you or whatever, but you can get your way. You can insist on things. And it wasn't like that at all. And I think that he just wasn't prepared for that. That's my only way of understanding this. Either that or they just showed him the JFK footage and, told him, this can happen to you as well.
Well, I'm sure that all presidents are shown the JFK footage. That I'm imagining a bunch of guys in black suits walk in and say, congratulations, duly elected Mr. President, we'd like to congratulate you on this, but there are certain things that have been going on within the government well before you're elected that will be going on well after you're elected. And we'd like to show you them, whether it be, I don't want to get too weird on aliens or whatnot, but yeah, I would agree. I mean, he was obviously also ensconced with incompetence. I read that he was talking about Jared Kushner, his daughter's husband, and his drive to basically the only demographic that mattered was the African American demographic, whereas he lost his key demographic, which was white men. Every demographic went up,
except that
a little bit, where white men just fucking fell off because it was like, what are you doing? All you talking about was it? I have the platinum plan. I've got the platinum plan. We got $2 billion to throw into the African American community from taxes taken from the productive people. And it's not taken from productive people like Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk. It's taken from people that work at muffler shops, people that work at, working in sort of resource extraction, whatever. You're talking like taxation always falls upon the actual productive members of society, not people. And this is getting into the territory of our esteemed Marxist, Beverly Hills Marxist people. But the truth of the matter is that people that pay taxes are the productive members of society, not the capital class and not the people that are living in Beverly Hills.
Well, let's get that over with first. I think that there are a lot of areas where we could find agreement with the left. However, the left have now gone completely off the reservation, and they no longer give a fuck about.
I would have been a leftist. You know? I was a leftist 20 years ago, dude.
Yeah. Well, so was I. It's easy for me to forget more this. Than me. Yeah. When I was 19, I was like 17, 15 to 19, I was extremely liberal. Like I took it as a sort of raison d'etre to be as liberal as I possibly could. It was just, I was a dick. I was an idiot. But yeah, I think at this point we could agree with them on this kind of stuff about economics. Or
absolutely,
whatever.
Absolutely.
But they no longer care about economics.
No,
they've completely left that. They don't even pretend to care about the white working class anymore, or even the white middle class.
No, so, I mean this is the British is the best example of this, where you had, I think there was an election last year or the year previous, where the Labour government or the Labour Party was blown out worse than in any election since 1935. Because what the Labour government has become is they're not Labour. They're not interested in the working man. They're not interested in economic liberalism, economic equality. They're basically a foundational party that's interested in the urban elite that goes, like, for example, our friend, the obese Beverly Hills King of Antifa, who's recently been, we could talk about that. But these people who, metropolitan elite that espouse Marxism, plus a unification with that Islam and minority grievances. And that's what the Labour Party is in the UK, as far as I can tell.
And now COVID as well.
And COVID, COVID, yeah.
That's the new component of all this. But yeah, that's what they are. It's the rootless cosmopolitan liberal, the urbanite, and globalism. So, mm-hmm. I mean, they've betrayed. Oh, God, it's unbelievable. But the thing is, they are just a sort of puppet theater thing. It doesn't even matter. The Labour Party is nothing. But also the Labour voters are just, I don't know, I don't think that they really have any autonomy either. I don't think that they're consciously thinking about issues anymore, really. I think it's that they're just seeing what is required of them. It's like the NPC thing. You know, they're saying, what does the system need of me now? What am I supposed to believe in today? Okay, that's that. And they do it. I think it's very strange, because you'd think that when everything starts to fall apart and civilization is in steep decline, you'd think there would be chaos, but actually there's a great rigidity of belief. People are.
Yeah. But the thing is we're absolutely in free fall, but the systems that are in place, I mean, these things are running on fumes. And if I wouldn't use the Roman Empire as a good example, because I mean, we live in very different times, but I mean, it took centuries for that empire to exhaust itself, whereas I would say it's going to take decades for our empire to exhaust itself. But as the Soviet Union did, and I actually put out a video just yesterday talking about the Soviet Union being the video I put out last yesterday was about empires and the lifespan of empires, and the Soviet Union being a weird one because it was based on ideological rigidity and it had no inbuilt flexibility in the way it was able to deal with crises, right? And this is why, like, for example, I read a recent article that Mikhail Gorbachev was seen as more disliked than Joseph Stalin in Russia today. Like, he's seen as more of a villain in contemporary Russia than Joseph Stalin. And part of that is that
well, once, at least you knew where you stood with Stalin.
Yeah. Or where
up,
you were.
Up against the wall, usually.
Up against the wall, exactly. So anyway, the point is that I would just say is that vis-a-vis these sort of things, that we are, there is no political solution at this point. All political solutions, I think the 2020 election was a very clear sign from the establishment is that we don't care. We don't care. We don't even consider your opinion to be valid anymore. And we're not even going to pretend that it is. And anyone who's under the impression, oh, like Turning Point USA or any of these, what we're going to do is we're going to work harder for the next election. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean,
you can work as hard as you like. I mean, they'll just change the votes.
That's all it is. I mean, so it doesn't matter. I mean, we are the plebeian class we're like literally in like 30, 35 BC Rome, and we're all the plebeian class, or even worse than that. And we're watching the aristocracy, you know, the patrician class do as they like. And but you know what? I enjoyed that Manchester versus whatever the other teams are. Manchester versus Liverpool game. My God, I was jumping up and down for that. Did you see them kick that ball into the net? That was amazing. That was amazing.
I loved it.
As they kicked that ball into the net, and by the way, the entire team was from either Somalia or Tunisia. It was, and they represent Liverpool. I was absolutely impressed. Shit, man, did you see that shit? They kicked that ball in there with such furious nature. And so, yeah, I mean, this is what we're absolutely dealing with, dude.
Yeah, it is a rather disastrous situation. Of course, the public, you know, they are placated by bread and circuses, and they are kept occupied with low level crap at the, you know, the political world of their country. Yeah. They don't see, this is the thing. I realized that I was watching a Nicola Sturgeon talking about someone commenting on the battle between her and Boris Johnson.
You should probably indicate who she is, the Scottish minister for the audience.
The First Minister of Scotland, and there's a power play going on between her and the Scottish government and the Westminster government, the national government of Britain. I mean, who cares? And who cares about the disagreements and the characters involved, the foibles of her and Boris Johnson? These people don't matter anymore, and that whole arena doesn't matter anymore, because while they're squabbling over what's probably going to amount to fuck all, people like Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates and George Soros are getting their way and unraveling their plans, developing their what they want for the future. They are succeeding, while these national politicians just fuck around, waste everyone's time, and while the public are distracted with that. It just seems, again, like a civilization in its final days.
Oh, I agree. As I said to you, as we kind of talked, there is no political solution at this point. And I'm tired of people asking me for white pills. I mean, take fucking responsibility. I'm basically a documenter of the fall of the Neo-Roman Empire. I mean, unless people take fucking responsibility, there's nothing I can do as a commenter. I'm a documentarian at this point. You know, I'm the Josephus of the 21st century.
Yeah.
You know?
But of course, it's, when you say take responsibility, we should be clear about what we mean there. It's not like, you know, the viewers of this live stream right now cannot change the world. What they can do is, because you'd need the whole fucking public to wake up and wise up.
Which is not going to happen. So yeah. As I said, excuse me, I agree with that. And I've said, and I'm actually creating like a new series of videos talking about where to escape. I mean, a lot of people can't escape, but a lot of people are young enough to escape. And I'm going to be creating a series of videos, whether it be to, you know, Malta, the Ukraine, a bunch of different places where people, depending on their economic resources, whether it be high or low, there are ways to escape. Or if that's not the case, you're going to have to try to find communities to congregate within. You're not going to find any sort of unity in places like London. I mean, you're not going to find community in places like Berlin or Toronto or New York. These places are atomized. They're the antithesis of any sort of community building places. But yeah, it's not the people that are watching. And I imagine, like, I'm, you know, people are going, he's so black-pilled. I can already imagine a whole plethora of comments coming in. And it comes from people that think that there is a political solution to any of this. And we passed that, I think, in the 1990s, to be honest with you. It's about survival at this point.
I mean, in 2015, you and I were making videos talking about mass immigration and the Islam and so on. And presumably at that time, at that point, when we were making those videos, we must have thought that there was some kind of political solution.
We did.
Yeah. And so you're saying that we were deluded then. And really the last chance was 20 years before that.
I would say that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think the last chance in Britain was probably the 70s. I could imagine it happening then. I could imagine that, but from the 80s onwards, you would need so many things like an advertising agency, a media outlet. The fact that
Black Lives Matter, they had literally riots in Whitehall in last year, where they were posting, or they were actually spray painting on the park behind the Big Ben clock, Parliament Square. Is that what?
Yeah, Victoria Park. I can't remember.
There's a park for listeners who are not familiar with London. They got the Big Ben clock, which is the big clock on the Westminster Palace, the Parliament, and then behind it there's a little square park, and in that park they have statues of famous people.
You mean Parliament Square?
That's the one. That's the one. Didn't I say Parliament Square?
I think you might have.
Anyway,
I was thinking of Victoria Park, where that Holocaust memorial is going to be. You're right. The actual square is.
So they have one of, they have Mahatma Gandhi, and he's actually now on the shit list because he was not congenial to Africans in South Africa. So he's on the shit list now as well. But I remember that Churchill was getting spray painted as being a pig and a racist and whatnot. And these people were rioting in Whitehall. And the funny part is, is that any sort of protest by people that were against lockdown measures and vaccination mandates were beaten with nightsticks by the police the week previous. And then the Black Lives Matter Antifa people were allowed to run roughshod over all of Whitehall. Now, Whitehall, for people who aren't familiar with London, Whitehall is basically the government corridor from Trafalgar Square to the Parliament, where the Big Ben clock thing is. And that's
where the civil service is.
Yeah, it's called Whitehall in British parlance. And the funny part is that I was looking at that, and the UK never imported slavery into their country. All of those people in the United Kingdom are there either because they desperately clamored to get in there, as we're seeing right now in the channel from France to the UK, where you have these every day was like 1,000, 2,000 people taking rubber boats across the English Channel, or they came from Jamaica, Africa, whatever. They voluntarily came to the United Kingdom, and then now they're saying, well, no, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. We demand more because we're failing. Whereas I don't really see a lot of like Hindu Indians out there, or I don't see a lot of like Chinese or Japanese. So if the society is intrinsically racist, everybody except white people would be at the top. Or sorry, all that. Let me restate that.
Would be rebelling. Would be moaning about.
Yeah,
racism.
But there's only one group of people rebelling, and it's interesting because it is. No matter where you find this particular diaspora, whether it be Toronto, whether it be London, Edinburgh, Paris, there's one diaspora that has a singular problem on economic and social failure, and it's always the host country's fault. I'm wondering why anyone would even take this into consideration at this point, but they do. They do. Whereas I said, people that were against lockdowns, people that were against mask mandates, people that were against vaccine mandates, when they went out to protest, they had these big nightsticks and they were beating the crap out of these people. And then the next week they're saying, well, actually, the BLM protesters are fighting the virus because everyone's afraid to come out while they're protesting. And, therefore, they're not mixing.
And this was astonishing, the way that the media would switch, just completely contradict themselves. So a BLM protest is actually good for containing COVID, but an anti-lockdown protest is a super spreader event.
Yeah.
I mean, that is fucking unbelievable. The lies and deceit there. Now, as for BLM and why black people are doing this stuff and moaning about the racism of their... I mean, for a start, if it is there's racist, why did they keep coming here? It's the same thing with America. I mean, just ridiculous. And also, they could leave at any time if it's that bad, but they never do. They never seem to leave. And I know some people say, well, they've set down roots here, but what about the ones who haven't? What about the ones who come here and get just bombarded with racism from white people? They don't leave either. So it's bollocks. Now, as for why they do this stuff, obviously part of it is that they don't achieve very much in our societies. They are at a disadvantage. But I think the other reason they do it is that they are easily riled up by certain other powers, the media, namely, and academia, into thinking that they've been unfairly victimized. Whereas Indians, Chinese are not so easily riled up. So you're not going to get Hindu Lives Matter or something like that.
You're not going to get Shinto Lives Matter or Buddhist Lives Matter. Yeah.
No. Exactly. So they're not as useful as pawns. But black people seem to be, demonstrably seem to be. And, you know, some people might say that I'm being unfair there, but look, you've only got to look where the money comes from. I mean, it's huge corporations that are making massive donations to BLM. As we were just saying before we went on air, that woman, and she's described herself as a trained Marxist. She said that we are trained Marxists. And she's got a $3 million mansion. I think you said that she's got several.
Talking before, all of the people that speak in very simplistic Marxist codes, it's kind of interesting because we're on Odyssey, so I can say what I like. If you take a look at almost all of the gatekeepers of Marxism and socialism, whether they be, you know, grotesquely, morbidly obese men like Vaush, who lives in Beverly Hills, by the way, and grew up in Beverly Hills. So this is the Marxist who's bringing the working class along the way. Or Chunk Yogurts, I don't even know his real name, the fat guy from the Young Turks, the big fat dude. Chunk Yogurt's nephew, the guy makes $200,000 a month speaking platitudes of Marxism where he has trannies and other cretinous people. Well, I shouldn't say cretinous people. Like, he has transgender people and he has other people sending him their last dollar, where the guy's making $200,000 a month, just bought himself a $3 million mansion in Los Angeles. And then, but what you're seeing is that all of these Marxists are all very much grifting and doing it in a very, very well formulated plan to make themselves wealthy,
massively. We've got very rich. But finish that point.
I was just going to say we've got Beverly Hills Antifa man, who is making massive coin off of his grift. We've got Hassan, the Turkish guy, nephew of the Young Turks, Brown Buffalo guy, making massive grift. And these are the leaders. These are the leaders of the proletariat. They're not. What they are is they've understood that there's an entire generation of young people that have been indoctrinated with this entire ideology, whether they understand it or not. And they think that they're speaking to them. And they've been able to basically make their grift. And it's quite incredible. It's quite incredible. And their voices are approved by the establishment. Now you got to ask yourself why that is. Now, why are these
just before you get onto that, let me just mention that I just had a look here. Vosh has 510 patrons on Patreon, and ContraPoints has an astonishing 12,400 patrons on Patreon.
Yeah, well, think about ContraPoints. You know. ContraPoints, I'm sorry. ContraPoints, has he been gelded? Has he been neutered? Do you know?
For fuck's sake.
I mean, well, let's be honest. I mean, has he been gelded?
I don't know.
But this is a man. This is a man, whether or not he's been gelded, neutered, or
upgraded.
This is a man, and another thing that's quite interesting I've noticed about a lot of these grifters is they're all white men, all of them without exception. But the thing is that in order to be the establishment voice that they want to be, they have to distance themselves from their, I can't even believe I understand this vocabulary anymore, their cis gender nature. I mean, I didn't even know what that meant.
When I first heard it, I remember hearing it for the first time.
What does that even mean?
I had to ask it. What the fuck does that mean? I've never heard that term before. It doesn't seem to fit into the vocabulary. It's just a word that they've invented. Cis.
Yeah.
Where the fuck does that even come from? It's a weird one.
But you take a look at them, though. They're all invariably, I don't want to use this word in jest, but sexual degenerates. So you've got, they're either, for example, Vaush, he talks incessantly about pedophilia, and he talks incessantly about his sexual desire for horse cock. And I'm not making that up. Like the veins and the length of horse penises. He talks about this at length. And he also talks about his...
Nice pun, yeah. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, well, I'm working on it, right? So he talks about these things. He talks about his predilection toward child sexuality. You've got ContraPoints, and this is a man dressing up as a woman, and then you've got a couple others. I don't even know the names of all of them.
Philosophy Tube did the same thing.
I'm not sure. But my point being is I think what it is they understand that they're white men. And the only way to create any sort of validity for themselves is to extricate and to exorcise the evil that they are. Like, you can't just be somebody like you and me saying, you know what, I don't believe in economic inequality, which I don't. I think in that respect, I agree that our society is failing a vast number of people. I agree with a lot of the talking points of what would be traditionally called the left in terms of economic and redistribution from the haves to the have-nots. I agree with, you know, but I also agree with, you know, taking responsibility for yourself. But I don't agree with all of this weird identity politics sort of things. And I think this is why these sorts of people, they have to measure themselves as some sort of other, if that makes any sense. You know, like they have to either cut off their cock or say they like horse cock.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I think that if we were to be transported back to the 90s, you and I would be quite at home in some, you know, I don't know, grunge nightclub or something.
It would be
fine. I don't really think that we would have much to disagree with. And also on certain issues, we would be like race. We would be naive enough to go along with the consensus. Then we wouldn't feel like fish out of water. But after that, after 2000, there was obviously some huge divergence from economics into social issues, which became more and more intense and really pretty fucking quickly. So that just 15 years later, you've got the whole SJW stuff and And yeah, then that leads to non-binary, gender fluid, transgender.
But you notice that now the all norm, of the, really. But you notice all of the people, supposedly the spokespeople for these people, they're all white men, whether or not they've had their cock cut off or not. Well, they're all white men. That's all probably, of them are white men.
That's probably because of talent. I would. Well, then again, is Vosh talented? I don't know.
Beverly Hills. Vosh is from Beverly Hills. He's morbidly obese, and I don't think he's talented at all. I think he plays words, and he talks Marxist speaking or talking points.
Yeah, that's what I was going to
for bring his grift. His grift.
Yeah, and it absolutely is a grift. I mean,
literally, the guy's from Beverly Hills.
I don't know if he really believes anything that he says, but one thing that's interesting is that there is this thing about him being a CIA asset and having a handler who advises him on for streams and stuff. I don't know if it's true or not. I can't remember
I won't go down that road.
No, and I'm not going to go either. I'm just mentioning it because maybe someone will know. It was a few months ago. It was theorized that because he's defending the CIA. He's defending imperialism. Both within America, like if a state wanted to secede, I remember him proudly saying, well, we'd just invade them anyway. So, because he wants, and then he said also that recently that he would back a CIA coup to take out Putin in Russia. So imperialism abroad as well to ensure that everyone is, I think he said pro-West.
Call me shocked. A grotesquely obese streamer from Beverly Hills who memes Marxism is possibly a CIA asset.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying he is. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying.
What's the theory that he is?
Sorry, I didn't mean grotesque obese. I meant morbidly obese. Sorry.
And yeah, I think what's interesting about Vosh is that, you know, he can say something like that, and he has said that. It's not a theory. He's said it, that he's up for just taking people over by force who don't believe in what he believes, who care about kin, who care about traditional values, etc. He would take them over by force in order to just force them to adopt these values. That is fucking, that's a world away from the left of even the 2000s, the 90s or the 80s, when it was all about let people do what they want. And who are
fuck you?
To you,
I won't do what you tell me. Fuck exactly. You, I won't do what you tell me.
And it was the moral relativism and cultural relativism. Everyone's got their own truth and, you know, just leave them alone. Whereas now it's, you will be okay with your child being a transsexual, and you will be okay with
your grandchild. And if you're not okay, we're going to take them away from you.
Or we're going to take them away from you, dispossess you, and take over your country. Yeah. I mean, it's a very strange change in the left that they now just brook no dissent whatsoever.
They're not leftists anymore. They're instruments of the establishment. And all that's happened
exactly
is that the moral compass has completely shifted from family, from tradition, from the relevance of kin, as you were saying, to globo homo. I mean, this is all it is. And they are the foot soldiers of the establishment. I mean, that's something people have to understand, is that these aren't radical revolutionaries looking to help the disenfranchised populations of the world. No, they're living in Beverly Hills. These are people that are living in $3 million mansions. And they're talking, they're spouting Marxist talking points to their basically illiterate audience to send them super chats that make them millionaires as they spout, like, tax the rich, you know, you eat the rich. And these guys like Hasan Piker, Habibi, the Turkish man, makes $200,000 a month off of super chats. Right. And you've got Beverly Hills Antifa King Vosh, Beverly Hills Antifa King, sitting there with his, let's take it to none of these people have any concept of what the working class is. None of them do. They have no idea. And the working class repudiates them.
Or the middle class.
These aren't middle class, working class people. None of them are.
know, they have the life of Riley. And, you know, I don't even care about that. It's just that they then preach to everyone else about this stuff. That someone just pointed out that Vosh, there's a clip that came out yesterday of him saying that I don't know if you've seen this. He says he was an FBI informant. He fed names to the FBI when he was part of Antifa. Do you know about this?
No, I don't.
It was a clip that I saw yesterday, and I, that doesn't mean that he's a CIA asset, but it does mean that he is at least an informant, you know, to the FBI.
I think we're giving too much airtime to this morbid obese fucking Marxist pig. Not, yeah. I wouldn't even call him a Marxist pig. I would call him a pig, but I wouldn't, like, pig as in corpulent, obese, not as in a police matter, just overly corpulent. But we're giving way too much airtime to this piece of trash.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, someone says pigeons are implicitly white. I don't know about that, but there we go. You have to be careful because you're in enemy territory. I think he's referring to YouTube. If they are going to rig the game, at the very least, make them work for it. I hope this work. Someone, Sir Charlton the Based. Unfortunately, I don't have the. Yeah, thank you very much. And Middle Class Twit makes a donation. Thank you. Nice to see you guys streaming, and you can follow him here too with Black Pigeon. That's someone sharing your channel. Someone says, "Thank." This is Based. Okay, thanks for sharing your face, Black Pigeon. Someone appreciates that. Thomas says, "Nice to see you guys streaming." Gus Faze says, "Interestingly, by admitting that the BLM protests scared people into staying home while lockdown protests did not, they are admitting that those people were more violent and more threatening to the general public." Yeah, that is an interesting point. The authorities were admitting that the lockdown protests don't intimidate the general public. That they seem like reasonable people, whereas the BLM protests are intimidating. And indeed, in London, they were marching. I mean, there was absolutely a paramilitary tone to the BLM stuff that was going on in London last summer. And indeed, the leader of it has been shot in the head, Sasha Johnson. I don't know what happened to her in the end. I guess we'll never see or hear from her again. I mean, it's a violent world.
That is unfortunate. I mean, even if you disagree with somebody's politics, that's an unfortunate thing to happen to anybody. I know I know who you're talking about, and I think she was shot in some sort of black gang activity as well.
Yeah, it was. She was at a house party, a garden party.
Yeah,
and this happened. She wasn't even the target. It was an accident. No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's awful.
But these are very small prices to pay for very divergent and excellent restaurants.
An incredible range.
Incredible. Sorry, I couldn't remember how.
Okay, someone explains about cis. Cis and trans come from stereochemistry, each of which describes the orientations of molecular groups in relation to each other on a cyclohexane ring. Fucking hell. Oh, thank you for that explanation. I have absolutely no idea what it means, but thank you.
No.
What do you think of the idea? Oh, gosh. I'm not sure if I can read this out. What do you think?
If you can't, don't. Just don't. If you're even contemplating, don't.
Yeah, probably not. But Luke, thank you for the donation. I'm sorry. You'll have to understand that I probably shouldn't take the risk. Okay, and then, Vosh admitted he gave names to the FBI when he was in Antifa just yesterday. He called himself an informant. Yes, he did.
And he talks very highly of horse penises and the veins and length and girth of horse penises. This is the leader of Beverly Hills Antifa.
Yeah. I just want to, this is from Unknown Californian. I just want to thank BPS for red pilling me. I was finishing college and was completely indoctrinated in leftism, but deep down I always felt something was wrong. Then I found his videos on YouTube and was blown away. Finally, someone speaking the truth. There you go.
Well, sorry, what was his name?
Unknown Californian.
Unknown Californian. I very much appreciate it, and I'm glad I could help.
Yeah, and then he says, continue with your phenomenal work. It's so important. So, there we go. And then he also says, Reagan granted amnesty in the 80s. Californians fought back in 94 with Prop 187 to stop the invasion. The courts overruled it, and that was the death knell for the once conservative bastion of California.
Ronald Reagan was the governor of California before he became president, if you can imagine that. Like, California, when it had a white majority, was a solidly Republican state.
That's incredible.
Imagine that. If you can even imagine that, yeah. Right? So, yeah, anyway.
It's remarkable. I mean, so, Vertical Politics did a fantastic video about California. I can't remember. I think it was called the Decline of the Golden State or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was like a 20-minute video where he told the story of how it was very concise, but it was a really well-told story. And it's tragic because you see these photos from very, like, historically very recently, the 50s, where it was whiteopia. It was just,
oh, dude, idyllic. It's funny. I can probably put this in to your thing. I was just seeing somebody who, it's not only whiteopia, it was, this guy has redone, I'm going to put it right in your chat on Odyssey. Anyone can watch that if they're interested. And I just put it into your chat there. It's a 60 frame colorized it's just been completely redone to make it look like modern footage of Los Angeles in the 1950s. Now watch that and ask yourself, oh, well, there's been a lot of progress since the horrid 1950s. Right? Watch that. Oh shit!
Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, there you are. You're back.
I'm just looking for. It looks like. Did I not send a link for this stream? I don't understand what's going on there. Okay, let's see. Just want to get that chat open. I wasn't keeping it open there. All right. Yeah. So, The Fall of California by Vertical Politics. Yeah, that's the one. Thank you. I can't see your link, Felix, that you've pasted. I don't know where you...
I pasted it in the Odyssey chat, the link that you sent me, that I'm not watching it, but the link that you sent me of the chat on Odyssey, I posted there.
Okay.
It's in there. Hold on, I'll do it again. I'll post it one more time.
Yes.
It just look. Oh, it's... It comes under un...
Oh, there it is. I've got it. Yep. I've got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone watches that and sees what California looked like. I mean, that was literally, I think California from the 1930s to the 1970s was probably the zenith of Western civilization. It was literally the zenith. I mean, I went and watched, there's a cinema here near the university. And what they do is they play double features. And they play double features based on either actor or director. Or I think when I was in London the last time, I told you about that movie I saw by that British director. Everybody knows the movie Kes, British people. Everybody knows.
Yeah.
But I was telling you about the new one that he made. Kes is from the 1960s, but he made a new one last year called Sorry We Missed You, about gig economy and Amazon drivers and whatnot. But at the same cinema I watched recently, it was a Dustin Hoffman two feature. It was the first one was Kramer versus Kramer, and that was when divorce was starting to begin in America in the 1970s, I guess. And there was like a child custody thing. But the other one was The Graduate. And if you haven't seen The Graduate, I mean, this movie was made in the 1960s or early 70s in California. Jesus Christ, man, I want to live there. Like, yeah, where I want to live.
Yeah, you know? I think that was 69.
Something like that. That's where I want to live. I was watching that because he's bouncing around between San Francisco and Los Angeles in his convertible car with some Simon and Garfunkel music, but all of the towns are spick and span, clean, beautiful, wonderful. I mean, like this, I mean, but you know, we have, what is it? An incredible array of restaurants. No?
Yeah. Yeah. That California, I mean, you can even see it still in the 80s. It's still a nice place. And, you know,
I was
looking at the filming locations, because I do this quite a lot. I look, like a film that I know well, I'll Google the filming locations for it. And usually you can find a webpage that has them all listed and it has a photo of the place now. The Terminator, 1984. Mm-hmm. Fuck's sake. You know, the street where she lives, the street that they used for that, looks like a perfectly nice, normal, happy street. Now it looks like a war zone. It looks fucking awful. Yeah. California, it must have just been fantastic in the 50s and early 60s prior to the whole thing. You know, the revolution, the pop rock revolution that we're supposed to celebrate, that the boomers think was just fucking wonderful. It wrecked California.
Oh, I agree. It's funny because I actually just downloaded recently a movie called Better Off Dead. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's hilarious. It's John Cusack when he's very young. It's from 1986, 1987. It's in a small California town where literally the only non-white participants in the show are these two Japanese brothers who drive around trying to drag race. And they talk about how the Japanese learned how to speak English from Howard Cosell, which was an American athletic. What would you call him? Like he would broadcast himself on
talk radio shows, kind of
thing. Sports shows. Like, hello, we're here at Wrigley Stadium, and what we're going to do right now is watch the first pitch go past the home plate and that was the two Japanese guys that were challenging him to drag race in his little town. And I was watching this and the town bully is this, you know, this Chad guy. I don't remember his name. I'm the ski captain. He's the captain of the ski team.
Right. And so school jock kind of thing.
Yeah. The high school jock. He's the captain of the ski team and he's trying to make the ski team to impress the girl that he likes. And there's a French foreign student living across the street. My point is that world is gone. You know, now it's gone. And anyone thinking it's coming back because we vote a particular way, yeah, good luck. Good luck.
Yeah, I agree that you're not going to, I mean, the only way would be for California to, secede.
Well, good. Let them go. Let them fucking go.
Build a wall
around the place and don't let any of those people out. Just build a wall around California
and cut and cauterize. But of course that would mean the loss of that forever. But you know, it's already lost.
It's lost. It's already gone. And it only took what, like 25, 30 years for it to be lost. Let it go. Let it go. And just sayonara. Sorry.
And the thing is, as someone explained to me, that would get rid of a load of Hispanic votes, in the
55 presidential electoral votes. And that's the thing. Like, as I said to you previously, you know, up until, you know, the 1980s, California was a decidedly Republican state when it was a white state. Now, I mean, I don't even think Republicans even try there because it's just a Democrat state. It's never going to go the other way. And the thing is all of these Democrat states, they, once they take control, it's never up for tossing. Whereas like Texas, for example, they're talking, it's a purple state. And there is a very good possibility, whether it's 2024 or 2028, it's going to go blue as well. And the funny, I love the fact, this is actually something that people don't really realize, how red has been associated with the Republican Party and blue with the Democrat. Prior to the election of Al Gore and George W. Bush in 2000. Every year, so there's three major networks in the United States, NBC, CBS, and ABC. And they would have different colors every election. They'd have purple, they'd have yellow, they'd have whatever. And somehow in the 2000 election, the Republicans were given red and the Democrats were given blue, regardless of the historical associations with color.
I always wondered about this because of Reagan's famous phrase, better dead than red, meaning better dead than communist. And I always wondered, is that...
I mean, obviously it's been orchestrated that the fact that the Democrats have been associated now with the color blue rather than what they should be, the color red, they have now been given the color blue to associate their political parlance than their political ideology and their destiny and also their traditions. And it's funny how that happened, because as I said previous to that, all three networks had different colors, literally purple and yellow, in the one before 2000 between Clinton and Bob Dole.
Bob Dole was
purple and yellow on ABC.
I remember that. I actually remember that election because that was when I first went to America, when I was like 96, for a family holiday to Disneyland. And I remember there was an advert on TV for Bob Dole. And it was this woman saying, Bob Dole. Yes. Remember the Bob pen. Dole. No,
that's John McCain with the pen in the hand. Sorry. Yeah. Bob Dole was good because he always talked in the third person of himself. Yeah, Bob Dole said this. He's kind of like Nixon. You know, Bob Dole doesn't believe in that. Bob Dole says this and says that. I tell you, Bob Dole knows what he's
talking. It's funny. There are some people who do that. I think it's supposed to be a sort of symptom of egotism and narcissism to talk about yourself in the third person.
At
this point, I do think that the only chance for America is secession.
I agree. Balkanization. I agree. Other than that, the country has no future. It literally has no future. I mean, I saw in the New York Post a couple of weeks ago, it was outside of the City Hall somewhere in New York. There was a 187-year-old statue of Thomas Jefferson being taken down. Because Jefferson was a slaveholder, right? I mean, and it's funny because I remember when they were starting pulling down all of these things, I said in Washington on the Mall, you've got the Jefferson Memorial, which is actually beautiful. People don't realize that it's a recreation or an homage to the Pantheon in Rome. And the Pantheon is one of the best preserved Roman buildings in the world, and the reason is because it was turned into a church. But it's a beautiful building in Rome, and the Jefferson Memorial in Washington is a homage to that. But you've got him; he was a slaveholder. You move it over to the Mall. You got Lincoln. Lincoln was not about the abolition of slavery. He was about taking African Americans and sending them back to Africa.
He had no
idea, and had no desire to implement this
equality. Well, didn't believe in equality. No one.
Yeah.
Believed in equality.
So you move up the Mall, you move up to the Washington Monument, a big obelisk to a penis, you know, taken from ancient Egypt. And Washington was, again, he was a racist. The White House is to the left. If you're looking east-west, the White House has been completely occupied by racists throughout the entirety of thing. You go up to the Capitol building, there's a big equestrian statue of Ulysses Grant. And it's interesting. They've just, the statue that all those people in Charlottesville were talking about pulling down, it was a Robert E. Lee statue, and it's an equestrian. And supposedly it's, from an artistic point of view, it's one of the best examples of an equestrian statue ever made in the world. Like they spent, like it was one of the best. They gave it to an African American association. They're melting it down to make some sort of, I don't know, maybe a statue of George Floyd, whatever. But interestingly is that Robert E. Lee was offered command of the Union Army at the outset of the Civil War. And he refused only because at that time, America wasn't a unified country that people perceive it as today. America was a state. Like my state is Virginia, my state is Pennsylvania, my state is North Carolina, and people felt allegiance to their state, not to this idea of the United States. And I think it was after the Civil War that people would say that, you know, we Americans rather than the American state, like this idea of being a unified state didn't exist before the Civil War. And Robert E. Lee emancipated all of the slaves that he inherited through a marriage to his wife, as far as I understand. Arlington Cemetery, by the way, the most hallowed ground in the United States, Arlington Cemetery is built on his fucking land. That was his land. The house in Arlington Cemetery, that's his house. They expropriated it from him at the end of, and they took it and they buried all the Union dead on there. But Ulysses Grant, who has one of the a huge equestrian statue in front of the Capitol in D.C., he kept a slave during the Civil War. The guy you had know, a slave.
It would be funny if
he had a house slave for yeah. to fucking clean his boots during I'd love the battles.
It. I'd love it if it emerged that, you know, Vosh has slaves.
Probably does.
To underline his utter hypocrisy.
Yeah, I mean, his hypocrisy. I mean, Beverly Hills Antifa, man. The Beverly Hills Antifa. Excuse me.
But yeah. as for that fucking thing where I've forgotten which statue it was, but I think it was from Charlottesville where they're going to melt it down.
That's the equestrian of Robert E. Lee.
Yeah, yeah. And someone pointed out it really shows like libertarians have no answer to this because they would say, well, people are motivated by money. Well, this museum who got this statue could have sold it for like $500,000.
No, there was offers to from many organizations to buy it, and they were talking about relocating it to Gettysburg, for example. Mm. So to the battlefield at Gettysburg, because there's I've never been to Gettysburg, but there's a lot of museums and a lot of stuff at Gettysburg, and they were talking about we'll pay you $1 million for this, and we'll relocate it to Gettysburg as part of the National Historical Park that they have there. But they're like, no, we're gonna melt it down, and I'm assuming they're gonna make it into maybe a crack pipe with George yeah. Floyd's name on it, you know, like George Floyd with a fucking crack pipe maybe and a gun at a pregnant yeah. woman's belly, something like that. Yeah,
something like that. And the point is that they're foregoing the money that they could make from it.
Absolutely.
Which rubbishes the whole fucking idea that libertarianism is based on, that people are motivated by, you know, greed and acquisition and wealth. But they're really not. Because what they're actually motivated, or these people are motivated by, is revenge.
Melting down a beautiful equestrian statue that's over 100 years old. And as I said, I read that it's one of the best examples of modern equestrian statues on the planet. I mean, you can see lots of equestrian statues, whether you're in London, Paris, wherever. I mean, but this one, the Robert E. Lee one, it was actually, again, I think it was made by a French sculptor. The French always seem to sort of show up in American history. But yeah, they don't care about money. They don't care about the historical value of this. All they want to do is melt it down. In order to, I guess it's a power flex, and you know, good on them if they can do it. I mean,
they're foregoing the profit and their and what they could get from it. They're getting it's ideological, yeah, but it's also revenge and motivated by racism. I mean, they obviously hate white people.
Obviously,
that's what it's really. Well, like.
We live in a society where we believe that racism is only accomplished and only being perpetrated by white people, which basically foregoes any semblance of reality. Now, this is the funny part: is that I myself am a minority in the absolute sense of where I'm living right now, and I could tell you without any abandon that racism against white people and against other great groups of people, no matter where you go in the world, if you're a minority and if you're in a country that's not your own, you're going to find trouble. I mean, this is human friggin' nature now. And it's especially gotten bad since COVID started. And this is why I'm actually basically after many years leaving Japan very soon, is that I just don't want to live here anymore, because I'm just, I can go out all day and I can, I can't see another face that looks like mine for a week, 2 weeks, you know, and people are becoming a lot more aggressive against what they perceive as the foreign.
Is that so, because of COVID?
Yeah. Well, because there's just all the borders have been closed. See, now Asia, the borders, they don't fuck around. The borders are all closed here. They're all closed, whether it's Taiwan, you know, whatever, China, Korea, they close the borders and they don't fuck around. And what's happened is there's no foreigners unless you live here. And I think a lot of people like me have become somewhat less than happy about being a foreigner in a place where you're less than welcome because of COVID. Yeah.
That's an interesting aspect of COVID, that it's resulted in this sort of this xenophobia.
It really has. And hot take here. Japan is not filled with white supremacists.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know. I saw someone saying this, that it's going to have this effect of making people think about their own group far more than, because it's an outside threat that can come in and, you know, fuck things up. And that's going to make people think in those terms again.
Not European people, not Americans. No, they will bend over even harder and spread their cheeks even wider to prove that they're good people. No, maybe Eastern Europe, but not Western Europe or America. Bending over and opening the cheek. How far can I spread those cheeks? How far can I spread them? Is the question that they're looking for. Sorry, just being honest.
All right. Obviously I'm not going to ask you for white pills, but what advice would you give people?
Well, the two things. If you aren't capable of fleeing Western countries, I would say try and move to places where you can find like-minded people and communities. And those generally will reside outside of major metropolitan areas. So if you're in the United States, get out of the big cities. Get out of Chicago. Get out of LA. Get out of Seattle. Get out of San Francisco. Get out of New York. You know,
not Portland, though, surely.
No, well, no. But that's the scary part, is Portland used to be one of the nicest cities in America. And they're a very good example about how the entire paradigm can be reversed in order to make people hate themselves. It's also one of the whitest cities in America. And it's a shithole. But close to Portland, you've got Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. You've got Spokane, Washington. The problem is state governance, right? So, you know, if you live in Spokane, you're still going to be ruled out of like Seattle, Tacoma. So even if you get to a like-minded place, the governance is coming out of the major metropolitan areas. So what you want to do is you want to get out of those places. You want to go. So for example, if you're in the United States, you want to go to the Dakotas, you want to go to maybe Utah, you want to go to Idaho, you want to go to Nebraska, these sort of places. If you're in Canada, I'd even say, like, a lot of people try to say that Alberta is some sort of base place versus British Columbia. I don't think so anymore. Calgary versus Edmonton, both of them. I'd say, like, unfortunately, I'd go to the Maritime Provinces, Prince Edward Island, Labrador, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland. If you're in there, I'm not as acquainted with Australia as I am with North America. In the UK, you know, smaller towns, I would say get out. If you're able to, and you either have a job, and now, especially with COVID, a lot of people now are working remotely. There is now, and I'm going to be making a video series on these, on how to be an expat, and especially how to be an expat with not a lot of money. So, for example, if you're in the United States and you want to get over to Europe, for example, like I myself, I mean, we've talked, I mean, I have a British, I can get into the UK because of my British family, but a lot of people don't have that. For example, Portugal. Now, I'm not going to hold Portugal up as the best example, because it depends whether you're living in the Azores, Madeira, or the mainland, depending on your tax rate. But they have a high tax rate, nominal high tax rate, not as high as in other countries, but they do. They have a much lower tax rate in Madeira and the Azores. But you can move there if you can prove that you can just generate 600 euros a month in income. That's it, 600 euros a month. Other countries, it's more, it's less. Croatia has, so there's all of these different schemes that are arising right now around countries. I would suggest against Asian countries for the foreseeable future, because a lot of them, which used to be, I would say, premier destinations for people, whether that be Thailand, Bali, Vietnam, Malaysia, because of COVID, these places, and these are friends that I've talked to, they've all become very poor. And because they become very poor, the people have become a lot more, you know, there's a lot more criminal predilection, let's just say. And if you're a white face or a black face or a brown face, if you're not a local face, you'll probably face a lot more troubles than you would otherwise. There's Malta. If you got a little bit of money behind you, you don't really have to spend it, but you have to give the government a bit of a chunk of money for 5 years. You get it back, but all you have to do is rent out an apartment for 1,000 euros a month, and then after 5 years you get a passport, and then you can move to the Czech Republic, for example. There are a lot of ways to do this, whether you're going to isolate or take yourself away from this, because I don't believe there's a political solution at this point. It's either, as you said, balkanization or flight. And I'm going to be making a series of videos. I don't even know if people would be interested in them, to be honest, but we shall see. So you know, like, I would not suggest places like Singapore or Hong Kong. They're utterly expensive. Even Japan is a place. If you can figure out a way to make about $3,000 a month, you can self-support, you can self-sponsor yourself for a visa in this country. And if you're doing like remote work, I mean, outside of the major cities, because what's happening right now is they don't have mass immigration, but they have a falling birth rate like Europe. What's happening is all of the country towns, everyone's just coming into the big cities. So like, you can get countryside land for almost for free, and maybe they'll throw in a car if you take away the tax burden from them. So there are a lot of, so if you want a white pill, I would say pay as least tax as possible. Get out of metropolitan areas. Don't feed the beast, but become as self-sufficient as you possibly can. You know, whatever it is you have to do. And then also you don't have to be rich to do this either. And I would say accept a level of, I'd say accept a level of not poverty, but accept a level of income that is consonant to what you actually need rather than what you want. Right. Just don't feed the system. Just don't feed it. The system is defunct. It doesn't work for you. It hates you. It hates you. So
some people are saying in the chat that they would prefer to stay and fight. You know, what would you say about that?
Yeah, good luck. Good luck. The fight has been lost decades ago. So good luck. Good luck with that. I'm sorry. I'm not going to stay and fight for what? What are you going to fight for? You're going to be fighting against, like, your neighbors who think that Kamala Harris is the most competent person for the presidency. What are you fighting fighting for? Good luck. Good luck. I mean, if you're going to stay and fight for your local community, but if you're in a metropolitan area, good luck. Yeah. Well, yeah. Your family, all of these things. Sorry. I don't mean to be, you know, I'm just saying, I mean, you know, it's not your birthright. Your birthright has been sold years and years ago. So I mean, it's more of a matter of accepting the current reality and formulating a plan. Like in the Middle Ages, at the fall of the Roman Empire, are you going to be saying, whoa, no, we need to fight for the Roman Empire in Nîmes, France, or in Londinium? No. What you did was you looked to what the current and the reality of the situation was. And you formulated any sort of plan based on the available information you had, not on on dreams that aren't going to happen. So,
I mean, what I think is probably likely is for a lot of people is that they will.
Yeah, I see, hold on a second. I see in the chat that no one ever won anything by giving up. It's not giving up. It's about being intelligent about what's happening. It's about understanding this, the situation we're in. And I said, move to communities that you can be with or just exit the system. But don't feed it by, like, oh, no. Anyway.
Yeah. Obviously, there, you know, people will disagree about this. That's fine. And I understand what you're saying. But I think that it really depends on your degree of attachment to a land. I mean, some people will find it easier than others to let go. Some people will find it easier than others to suffer on behalf of a homeland. You know, they'll think, okay, it's worth it. You know, I love this land. I love this heritage, this history, and it means the world to me. And other people will think, I'm not that attached to it. I personally would like it if everyone were very attached to their homelands. But I understand that, you know, the last 100 years has really done a number.
You live in a city that literally within 30 years has gone from 95%, 98% British to less than 30% in 30 years.
I know.
Tell me how you're going to fight and save London. Tell me.
Well, look, hold on. I mean, I'm not going to personally fight and save London, right?
No, but I'm not saying you personally. I'm talking about people that are attached to this heritage and homeland. How are you going to save London? Like, give me a fucking game plan to save London that doesn't involve mass murder.
Let's not Fed post.
No, exactly. Look,
the system is probably going to collapse at some point. No system can last forever, and especially the more rigid it is, the less flexible it is, and the less realistic it becomes. You know, it's not in touch with the way people actually are anymore. We are heading into a tyrannical system. It will not last forever. It will collapse. And at that point, you would want as many people as possible to be there to take it back. I think that, so it's not insane for people to think we can take back London. You know, one day it can be ours again. I don't think that's entirely unrealistic. In fact, I think it's quite realistic. As I say, the system is inhuman now. It's already inhuman. I mean, it's crazy.
Are you saying this for the viewers, or do you actually believe this? I understand you have to say things for viewers, but are you, is going to be, so you believe like 5 million people are somehow going to disappear from London?
No, I don't think they're going to
disappear. There's 8 million people in London.
I don't think they're going to disappear. No,
there's 5 million non-British people. There are probably 6 million out of the 8 million non-British. What's going to happen to them? Where are they going?
I imagine they'll take to low level crime in order to survive.
Uh-huh. But they're still going to be in the city. Where are they going? Yeah. How are you going to take back London?
I'm not gonna go into Fed posting. I can just see, it's not gonna be me, right? I'm not the type to do this stuff. I'm a good guy, good boy. But obviously, when a society falls apart, people are going to they're going to do what they can to get what they want, and you know, that's just inevitable. I mean, it's happened throughout history. I'm not even.
What happens is that unfortunately you're never going to get back what you had. I mean, this is something that is real. I mean, I'm looking at the comments and in your comment section, and I'm not trying to like pee on the audience, but I mean, whether you take a look at however human history generally organizes itself, there's a guy, it's called The Fate of Empires, and it was a British man named Sir John Glubb. And he wrote on hundreds and hundreds of civilizations, strong states is what he would call them, like a strong state or a civilization. And they had a beginning and they had an inevitable end. And they almost invariably had the same trajectory, the same arc. And at the end of empire, you always had a massive influx of foreign people who were loyal during times of stability, but when times of stability ended, what they were was a fifth column that brought grievances and civil strife. And if you, it doesn't matter, you even take a look at, like, for example, in the last 120 years, you've got the Ottoman Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, both of them collapsed. And then you had the sort of like false starts of the Japanese Empire and the German Empire. I mean, they were like truncated. And then you had the British and French empires that basically fell apart after the end of the Second World War. I mean, the UK sterling was the de facto global currency reserve up until the end of the Second World War before the US dollar. So you, and then the entire British Empire collapsed at the end of the Second World War. And then you had the sort of weird one, which was the Soviet Empire, which lasted 80 years, but it had no inbuilt ideological wiggle room. They weren't able to move around because of, it was a stringent ideological empire, and that's why it didn't last very long. But what we are in, I mean, if you just take a look at human history and what we are as a species, you're not going to have a resurrection of 1920s Western society.
We've that civilization is dead. And yep. You know, I don't think that.
But yeah, I'm just looking at your chat. Oh, well, you know, BPS, you know, he's this and that. I mean, it's reality. And it's, oh, well, it's Christmas. Yeah, I understand that. And I'm saying, not that it's the end of the world. The world is changing. And what you should do is act appropriately to that change. It's not a matter of the world ending.
Yeah,
it's a matter of being aware of that and being aware of what's going on.
I understand. If everything is lost already, then you have a choice whether to put up a heroic final struggle knowing you're going to die. You're going to fail. Or to be realistic and think, right, okay, I'll just leave. I'll just go elsewhere. And at that point, that is a very binary choice, and I can understand that. I can understand people choosing either of those options. But in the meantime, you have this, that is not the situation. I think people are imagining, as I was saying earlier, that things will fall apart and then, you know, it's all up for grabs, as it were.
Mate, things aren't going to fall apart anytime quickly. You've got in your country 80-something percent of people that are double jabbed. This is what you're dealing with. You're dealing with a public, literally, that can be cajoled and frightened into taking some kind of mystery juice into their blood, close to 90% of them. What last heroic stand are these people going to take to save Britain? I'm waiting. Tell me.
Well, look, that's another issue. I mean, for a lot of people...
It's not another issue. It's the same issue. It's exactly the same
issue. A lot of people... Yeah, of course, I understand the link. But I think a lot of people, there will be many people who are perfectly patriotic and naive about the vaccine. I mean, I can think of several people I know who are like that, who love Britain, you know, old-fashioned Tory types who don't get that, what the vaccine actually is and what it represents. So from their point of view, it's a separate issue. And if you were to then say to them, you don't care about your country.
I'm not saying you don't care about your country, but all of your major cities, London is now majority non-British. I believe Birmingham is majority non-British. And I believe Manchester is going to be the next one. And you've got all the small little towns up in the north, like Blackburn and Rotherham and the small ones. But all of your major cities are all becoming majority minority. I mean, tell me how this is going to end because, well, there's Tory people who love the country. I'm just asking. I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, because I understand the comment section. They want white pills. They want hope. Oh, it's Christmas. BPS. Be happy. Be, you know, I'm just asking. How is this going to end?
Well, look, I'm not going to go into that kind of territory because it could get me into trouble. And I also want to emphasize, just for the sake of
how could you get in trouble at this point?
Just for the, I'm sure they could find a way. For legal reasons, I want to emphasize, I don't envisage myself, you know, leading people in some kind of struggle to take back London, right? Just for the sake of legal reasons, I want to emphasize that. Yeah. I'm not the type to do that. I'm not envisaging, you know, Mad Max territory or something and whatever. And that's not the reason I live here.
It's, no, I envision Brazil. Yeah. I envision Brazil. Is what I'm saying. It's going to be Brazil. What you're going to? Yeah, it's going to be. It's already on the road to Brazil.
Yeah, but that's, even but Brazil, even Brazil has power centers, and it's the, you know, the gangsters and whatever. That, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the future of London, is Brazil.
Yeah, but people will not. I mean, it's not the low IQ stock. What is it, 85 IQ there? It's a different situation here. We can't predict how that's going to shake out. Either way, obviously people are attached to this homeland. Obviously people aren't going to... There will be a lot of people for whom the option of just leaving is anathema.
I didn't say leave. I said get in communities that you agree with. So as I said, it's not leaving. I mean, you're moving the goalposts. What I said was join communities of like-minded people. And I said whether it was in the United States, the Canada, or the UK. And I said urban areas are not the places to do it in. I didn't say leave the country. I'm not saying go to Hungary, go to the Czech Republic. I'm saying you're not going to find like-minded people probably in Camden or in Westminster. You know, you're going to find like-minded people probably in Harrogate or York or Colchester or Clacton-on-Sea or Bournemouth or somewhere like that. So it's not talking about leaving. It's talking about associating yourself with like-minded people. And that's kind of where I went. And I was saying, like, what I'm trying to say is the urban centers of law, they're lost. Mm. And pretending otherwise is literally you're lying to your viewers. If you say that they're not lost, you're lying to your viewers.
I don't think I've misled my viewers. I think I've been very upfront about the state and the urban centers, and they know that already. I mean, it would be impossible for me to lie to them and say, "Hey, don't worry, everything's cool in Manchester and everything's cool in London." Everyone knows that. I don't think I'm lying to them, and I try to be very honest about this stuff. But of course, it's also difficult to paint the reality without sounding racist.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, it's not that. But I mean, take a look at South Africa. I mean, it was a country that independently developed nuclear arms and was the first place to have open heart transplant surgery. Where is it today? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, again, a number was done on South Africa that was similar in some ways to what's been done to Western Europe.
Well, I mean, the thing is like, for example, like you talk about, like, I'm looking at the comment section, like, I mean, I just see a lot of very ignorant people, to be honest. But I mean, for example, myself, I can't even go back to Canada now because I'm unvaccinated. I can't enter. Like, and if I do enter, I got to go into one of these concentration camps and get vaccinated, or they'll just bounce me back to wherever I came from. I mean, if this has been allowed and you've got literally like 80, 90% of people that are agreeing with this, it's these issues are all interlaced, all of them. And this is the public you're trying to reach and trying to save. You're trying to save these people. I mean, good fucking luck. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, what I've noticed, I mean, like yourself, I mean, I don't think you ever said anything inherently incendiary, but look at yourself. You're banned from everything. For what? Gavin McInnes, he's banned from everything. Stephen Molyneux, he's banned from everything. Alex Jones, he's banned from everything. You know, one after another, after another, after another, banned from everything. From what? For what? All you basically were talking about was pertinent ideas that resonated with a lot of people. Who are you trying to save at this point? I'm sorry. I mean, I'm sorry I sound so disjointed, but I mean, it is reality. And to pretend otherwise is, I think it's lying to the audience at this point.
Well, it would also be lying to myself, and I don't want to do that. And so, you know, there's a selfish motivation as well for being honest, for looking the reality in the face. as much as I also don't want to lie to my audience, which I don't want to do. So, I mean, I don't think I'm delusional about this.
I don't think you are either. Yeah, I mean, you and I have talked off camera. I don't even know how many times, and I think we're both in agreement. I'm just getting really, really skeptical on any sort of solution, and I become very much disinterested, especially after COVID, that I'm watching, like, literally I've lost friends because I won't get vaccinated. I've lost friends, you know, and I've had people, like Australian friends, that have said to me, you know, I'll show them videos. There was one video of two young girls. I can't really figure out how old they are, but they're pubescent, but they're not old enough to have like adult voices. So you're talking like, I don't know, 12 to 14-ish. They went into a grocery store in Australia somewhere, and they ended up being like 10 police around them. They ended up on the floor being beaten and pepper sprayed. I sent this to a friend of mine in Australia. He's like, yeah, well, the bitches, they deserved it because they are trying to spread COVID. I'm like, are you fucking serious? Are you serious? And I've lost friends by saying, hold on, guys. I mean, maybe there's a virus, and that's a bad thing. But, you know, we also have to contemplate the erosion of our personal freedoms that's going on right now. Oh, no. Stop your conspiracy theories. Stop them right now.
The key statistic, the key fact to tell them is that it has a 0.4% death rate. So yeah, 99.6% survival.
Doesn't matter.
Everything else is just absurd after that.
Doesn't matter. And I've lost like lifetime friendships over this. Right. And all of this is it's the same thing. All of these issues are they're conjoined, you know, and they certainly are. And if you're looking at 90% of people that can be hoodwinked and bamboozled into taking a mystery juice for, as you just said, can you repeat the statistic?
0.4% death rate.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the new black plague. This is the new bubonic plague that's flowing over our society that's going to kill us all. I mean, I'm sorry. I just, the last couple of years have pretty much not only demoralized me, but just made me realize that there is no public to save if this is what the public is. There's no one to save. I think it's not my job to do so.
Yeah, I understand that. One thing I would say is I think a lot more people are now getting skeptical because of the boosters, where they thought that they were signing up for two shots of the vaccine and then that's it and they'll get back to normal. Now that the rug has been pulled from under their feet, I think increasing numbers of people are pissed off. And they're starting to think maybe this was a charade from the start.
Not only booster shots, third shots, they're talking about, I saw it was the CEO of Moderna. So now they're working on a new one because with the Delta variant and the Omicron variant, they might merge and create a super variant. And now we need a new shot for that one. I'm like, how are people fucking falling for this shit still?
Yeah, I know. It's like, hilarious.
Seriously.
I put something up on Telegram today. It's like that with the movie poster for Sharktopus, where a shark and an octopus are merged into this super, this creature feature from hell kind of thing. And I mean, it's laughable, it's ridiculous, but the scare stories still seem to work, at least for now. But I think it's increasingly obvious because that it's all a load of shite, because vast numbers of people don't know anyone who has died from COVID. Vast numbers of people know one person who had it and it was pretty bad apparently, but he's fine now. So it's increasingly clear to a larger, ever larger number of people that this has been a big fuss about nothing. And so we've done all this for nothing. And that does clearly make people suspicious. I've seen normies flickering with realization about this. It's interesting. And, you know, in addition to that, there's the religious aspect to it. People want something, clearly want something to believe in. And that, I always assumed that. I always thought that. And COVID has absolutely proven it correct. Well, if they believe in this, they can believe in something else as well.
I completely agree. You're right about the religious aspect to this. And I think it is a yearning desire within our society, because pretty much all structures and all of the organs that held our society together pre-1965 have been basically broken down and destroyed. And I think that this has a lot to do with, as you said, I think human beings, we are hardwired to search for meaning and also search for, let's just close this. There's a helicopter over my room. They're coming for me. They're coming for me. But we have a desire for something greater than ourselves. And I would agree, COVID has given that. And it's interesting. Now, don't let this be memory hold. Do you even remember at the beginning of this, in the very beginning of 2020, there were videos of hundreds of people in streets in Wuhan on the floor shaking around? They were spraying the streets with this.
It was like something from a low budget Hollywood
zombie movie,
horror movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They were welding people into their homes, and the World Health Organization said, lockdowns. Lockdowns are the answer. Lockdowns are the answer. And so what happened? China locked people in by welding them into the. And do you remember those things? That scared the shit out of the planet. I remember watching that going, holy fuck, man, what is this? What is this? I mean, it looked like...
I think that's exactly what we were supposed to
It looked
to
like
think.
A zombie was, apocalypse.
Yeah, it was it just did. To make us shit ourselves with fear.
Now, how many people have you seen, how many people since the initial reporting of this, of the initial reporting of COVID, how many people have been like rolling around on the floor going like, oh, I'm foam coming out of their mouth. Nobody. This is, I'm not going to give any sort of like definite whether or not, I'm not Alex Jones, but definitely there is a lot of malfeasance going on in the reporting and selling of this. Right. And, I don't know, I guess, it is scary, you know?
It's scary how manufactured this might well have been.
Yeah.
You know, Sharktopus, that was a Roger Corman film. You know,
yeah.
It, maybe he's had a revival recently. it is strange. And it's like nothing else. You know, nothing in my lifetime has been like this. And it's been an eye-opener in all sorts of ways.
Do you not see how they sold it to us, though?
Yeah, it's fear. I mean, it's ruled by fear. It's the biggest cliche that. In the book.
At 0.04, did you say?
0.4.
And this is how they told us that the greatest scary threat of our you know, the last 100 years.
Even then, that's the overall death rate. If you limited it to the under 80s, it's minuscule. I mean, yeah. It's nothing.
But we've stopped our world economy. We've broken supply chains. I remember when I was in London earlier this year. I mean, when I first arrived, I had problems finding, which I drink. I drink a lot of carbonated water, like sparkling water.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember there was serious problems finding that. And then after a couple of months, or, you know, 2 or 3 months when I was in London, you know, you go into a Tesco or into a Sainsbury, you know, not half the shelf, that's an exaggeration, but a quarter of the shelves were empty. You know, I like pickled onions. I liked a lot of different stuff, and I couldn't find stuff, you know, lots of products. So we've disrupted our supply chains. And then, well, that's because there's not enough lorry drivers. Well, the reason there's not enough lorry drivers is because they stopped giving driver's licenses and tests because of COVID. Right. And so we've broken our supply chains. We've got record inflation right now, by the way, on record, the highest jump year on year in inflation. The US was, I think, 9.6%. Japan was like 10%. I'm not sure what it is in the UK, but probably something similar. So we got record inflation. We've got broken supply chains. We've got people that are dying because they can't get medical help because it's not COVID related. So if you had a heart disease, cancer, you had some sort of ailment that wasn't COVID related, well, sorry, we don't have any medical attention for you. We've done all of this for, as you said, a virus that has a 0.4%. And then if you articulated that to the under 80s, I'd probably even say it's probably less than that.
Oh, it's much less than that. It's much less than that.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but the vast majority of the deaths are in the over 80s.
But they've been able to get 90% of people to take two mystery juice jabs. That, by the way, prior to them being rolled out, all of the companies were legally indemnified for any kind of recourse toward whatever happened in the long term. So there've been no long-term studies. Now, if you take a look at the companies, Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, all of them have been guilty and been fined in the hundreds of millions of dollars for propagating stuff that kills people. Like, none of these companies have any kind of clean slate. Like, I think it was Pfizer.
Pfizer are the worst, I think.
Yeah, they I think in the 90s even, it was something like $300 million fine. But that's a drop in the bucket for the amount of money that they're making off of this. But again, you've got 90% of people complying to this. You know, I had this conversation. I wonder if part of the reason is that, you know, maybe the best part of our peoples were all killed off in the Second World War, you know, like people that, you know, wanted freedom and people that wanted, you know.
This is the thing. It does make you reappraise what you value in people. And a lot of the people who fall for this are still perfectly good people. It's just that they don't have that rebellious instinct.
It's not that they're bad people. It's, yeah. I mean, like I said, but the problem that I'm having is that when people say, are you vaccinated? And I said, well, I'm not. And why aren't you? I said, well, because I just don't know if the long term. Well, are you selfish? Are you don't care about everyone else? Are you trying to spread this? And then they won't be my
just say yes.
Lifelong
just say
friend.
Yes. I'm selfish.
Well, possibly, but I'm talking like lifelong friends that you can't even have a conversation with anymore. I mean, it is that fucking ridiculous at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it is. It is. But look, we've gone way over. So let's call an end to this one here.
All right.
There were a few super chats, but we've actually covered all of these questions just because we talked for so long. Someone said, yeah, I think this was about moving abroad. Someone said, I think you need both strategies. Some people need to expatriate to base of operations elsewhere, but you also need people who stay to create bases of operation on the inside. Yeah. Yes, that's true. I grew up in California in the 80s as a young kid, grew up there in the 90s as a young adult. Our life slowly crumbled due to my dad losing his union construction job due to immigration and lower wages. That's fucking depressing.
Well, you know, he should just stay there and fight for California, because one day California is going to turn the corner.
Well, let's not get into that again. I'm not sure how attached he is.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very concentrated thing there with all of these Hispanics just flooding upwards. But anyway, I think that's them all. Yeah, we've dealt with all of those. I'll just check entropy. Felix Funkmaster Flex Rex. I don't know what that's a reference to, but there you go.
No idea.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Felix Rex, Black Pigeon Speaks, for appearing on Millennial 2021.
Peace.
All right. People can find your channel. It's linked below. And all right. I'll be back soon. And there are actually going to be two more tonight. The next one is with Last Things. And then after that is going to be Ryan Turnipseed. So, okay. Thank you, Felix. Thank you to the audience. I will see you soon. Just let me have 10 minutes to recharge. Bye-bye for now.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.